You can't replace part of the brain. Like, you
treat them the same.
The source of truth for the medtech industry.
Coexists with the
robot. Robot understands things automatically.
Number one show in the medtech industry.
So Stryker got ahead of that and changed it. In the 90s, built $1 billion company that helped up high. A lot of things.
State of medtech.
With your host, Omar M. Khatib.
Welcome back to the show, everybody, and I am freshly back from the greatest week in medtech, which is the LSI event down in Dana Point. It's one of my favorite events, the best event in the industry, in my opinion, mainly because it's just such a great culmination of strategics, investors, family offices, private investors, and of course, innovators. An amazing week. If you missed it, don't worry. If you're a founder, you have to attend this event, whether it's the USA or European event. The Europe event happens every fall, and this year it's happening in beautiful Portugal. If you want to learn more, and of course, get a presenting slot. With that presenting slot, they make this beautiful video. I always recommend it to clients that I work with just because it's a great video that you can use for marketing purposes. But of course, you get to be up on stage. And even if you can't get a slot to present, be sure to attend in person. Just go to lifesciencemarketresearch.com, click the events tab, and then look at LSI Europe, which is going to be happening in Portugal. Now, who is our guest today? So our guest today is the co-founder and CEO of IntelVasc, and that is Andrew Ortega-Verduard. We met at LSI's event, actually at JP Morgan, and I really love their technology. It's very interesting. Stenosis, or essentially the narrowing of vessels, is something that affects millions of people, and a lot of people die as a result of it. You know, usually have plaque buildup or something happens to the vessel walls, it narrows, and then you end up with a cardiovascular event. The problem with this is that unlike a lot of other pathologies, when you have a narrowing of a vessel, you don't really feel it, right? So if you have a family history of it, you know, or maybe you get it, you know, you go get it, you know, get it checked, you know, they maybe prescribe some medications and everything, but you really don't know when it's getting worse until you have an event and you end up in the hospital. IntelVasc's whole mission is monitoring vascular stenosis anytime, anywhere. They have this very interesting subcutaneous implant along with a monitoring device. And so they are able to monitor this at home. Me personally, I'm a big fan of this kind of segment because after COVID, everything is moving to, you know, essentially trying to do things in smaller settings. Nobody wants to go to a big hospital. And if not a regional ASC, people want to just have their healthcare done at home. And so I think this is an amazing approach. And more importantly, it's something that's deeply needed because so many people, again, as I mentioned, if you have narrowing of a vessel, you don't feel anything. And you're like, okay, I'll just monitor it. But a lot of patients don't do follow-up. They don't have good adherence to their medication regimen. And as a result, they end up with a cardiovascular event and they end up in the hospital. So I think it's a very interesting technology. And more importantly, for me at least, I love getting these companies at an early stage. So if you're an investor, definitely reach out to them right after you hear this episode. Now, finally, just a couple of quick shout outs. If you're a founder, Andrew is a great example. His company, I believe, is just barely raised a seed or pre-seed. So they're very early on. And when I met him, he told me, he said, hey, I would love to be on your show, but you know, we're still very early on. And I told him, hey, the purpose of my show is to help founders like you at the earliest stage get that PR and marketing and attract some investors, attract some partners. Okay. And of course, this is not a pay-to-play thing. The way that I give back to the ecosystem is that I have a business that bankrolls this show and gets these founders on. And we produce great clips, as you all know. So if you're a founder and you're interested to be on the show, maybe you're an exec or an innovator, whatever it might be, even investors, check the show notes below. There's a link you click to submit your form. Go ahead and submit it. My team will reach out and we'll get you scheduled. And finally, as we know, finding early adopters is really difficult in this industry. You have to look at procedure volume, publications, and many other things because then you can find the best adopters who are not so obvious. The problem is most databases out there, they're if not clunky and difficult to use, they're extremely expensive. This is why I've partnered up with Alpha Sophia. Alpha Sophia has an amazing database that I personally use with all my clients, including the show, to figure out which physicians have certain procedure volume? What do they have in terms of relationships with the industry? What are their social media handles and more? And then we're able to pick the right early adopters. And the best part about it is it's affordable. It starts out at $300 a month, which is something that anybody can afford. And most exciting is that just recently, Paul Lucas Hoffman, who's the founder, co-founder of AlphaSophia, just announced they just added a whole lot of new commercial data. So before, a year ago, it was mainly CMS data, Medicare, Medicaid. Now they added commercial data. So their platform is even better. I played around with this with it this morning. It's fantastic. So to learn more about it and actually to get three free reports, that's three, one, two, three, go to alphasophia.com/Omar. That's alphasophia.com/Omar. Get your free report. And now let's get on our episode with Andrew of Intellivask. Enjoy.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Another great and exciting startup. You know, the world of cardiovascular diseases saw a significant amount of investment last year. I believe after orthopedic and imaging, they had the third most amount of funding last year in med devices. As we all know, 2023 was a tough year for funding to begin with. This year, things are definitely looking a lot better. And so today I'm joined by Andrew Ortega Verdaguer, who is the CEO and co-founder of a really cool company called Intellivask. Andrew, thank you so much for joining us. How are you?
Thank you for having me, Omar. I'm very well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I'm glad we ran into each other at LSI's event at JP Morgan. And I remember what you told me, you're like, you said, oh, you know, we'd love to, you know, come on your show, but we're still like very early stage. And I told you, I was like, no, that's actually, this is the best time to come on the show. One of the reasons why we have this show is to highlight early stage companies just like yours, because, you know, marketing and PR is kind of expensive, and that's something you should worry about later. Now, you know, we love highlighting early stage companies. So before we get into the company, really cool looking device, by the way, and I love your guys' website. It does a good job of positioning the problem well. Give us a little background on you.
Yes, thank you, Omar. Well, I started in the medical industry 15 years ago. I spent the last decade working in cardiovascular surgery, vascular surgery, in different companies like Terumo and Penumbra, in different executive positions. Last position I held, it was leading the vascular division at Penumbra, and the EMEA region. And I've seen over 200 cases in the OR, and I supported them with the surgeons. And I realized that many cases came from the emergency unit instead of the scheduled surgery. So that dramatically impacted the clinical outcomes. And at some point, also, I had a traumatic personal experience. My best friend passed with the age of 37, the age I have now, three kids behind. It was quite big for us and the family. It was in 2020. And then in 2021, my dad was diagnosed of the occlusion on the common carotid, the vessel that is the brain's feeder and the cause of 25% of these strokes. So with all this combined, I thought that I have to do something. I always had quite innovative mindset. I like to set up companies and do different things, but I've never tried that. So I was terrified because, you know, I've been 15 years in corporate. You know what you are doing. You know your environment, and entrepreneurship is a completely different animal. But I thought that for the sake of the social impact that this company would have, I believe that it would be worth giving it a try. And here we are.
Fantastic. Wonderful. And I love that background. And, you know, nothing, I love seeing, you know, it's really hard, to be honest. You know, I think when you work at companies like Penumbra and large med tech, and then you go into the startup world, usually people, they do it and they're very excited about it, but they realize like you have to have very, very tough skin. And it's very tough. You know, it's just rough time. So, tell me, what is the big problem that you guys are solving clinically? If you can put it in one sentence.
Yes. We are monitoring vessel occlusion remotely using ultrasound. What we try to do is anticipate vascular events that normally have deadly consequences, so the doctors can act earlier and hopefully having scheduled surgeries.
Got it. Yeah, and just to kind of read off like some of the statistics you have on your site. You know, so like 90% of these types of patients are usually asymptomatic before a vascular event occurred, which, by the way, one of my mentors passed away from this, like just, you know, he was in his 50s, young guy. 35% of these patients, they skip their follow-up, right?
And then 30%, they need a second intervention. So it's definitely a huge issue. And I think that what you guys is trying to, what you're trying to essentially position yourself as is more on the predictive health side, which is how do we empower the patient to have more control at home and monitor this before a acute event happens. Is that correct?
Well, that's a super interesting fact that you just pointed out here, Omar, because cardiovascular events are a completely different disease than, for instance, cancer. When you go to the doctor and the doctor tells you, sir, you have cancer, you are super scared. You don't know what to do. Many people, they are thinking twice what they are doing in life, reevaluating their lives. But when they tell you, sir, you have an occlusion in the femoral artery, normally you don't know what it means, or even in the common carotid, and you don't feel anything, you don't feel any pain. And because there is this lack of disease awareness, those patients, they don't change their lives. These cardiovascular events are the first cause of death in the world. And mostly, some of them, they are genetic, but mostly there are self-inflicted disease because of lifestyle or what we eat, how much exercise we do. So if we could increase the disease awareness of cardiovascular disease, the deathly events would be much lower. So I believe that our and other initiatives that are engaging the patient with the disease are going to increase a lot the awareness and therefore changes in their lifestyle and diet as well, which will improve a lot the quality of life of those patients.
Yeah, you know, I don't know if you have the data off the top of your head, but like in the US or global, like how many people are affected by this essentially? I don't know if you have that number off the top of your head, you know, in the US.
Yes, of course. In the U.S., peripheral vascular occlusion affects almost 50 million people, which is an enormous number. And if we only talk about the legs, acute limb ischemia, 33 million patients are affected. Out of those patients, of course, not all of them are treated at the same time or every year, but there is a large number of 3.2 million patients that they are visited or intervened of peripheral vascular occlusion, and it's a huge problem also for the public healthcare systems, where in Medicare spends over $5 billion every year to manage this disease. Overall, it's $20 billion of expenditure trying to manage peripheral vascular occlusion. So it's a massive problem that we are facing here.
Yeah, and that is a huge number. Just for context for the audience, I mean, usually when you look at like medtech investments and everything, you know, you want to make sure that you're not dealing with like a rare orphan disease, you know, which usually that's something that's big pharma that, you know, deals with because they have the money to do that. But this affects, just in the United States, like 15% of the population, which is a huge, huge amount. It's probably even higher than that because these are just reported numbers. A lot of times when I see reported numbers on things that, like if you know somebody who died from a certain disease, whatever the reported number is, it's likely that it's higher, right? And a lot of times, you know, with vascular stenosis, you end up with other issues. Like, for example, you can, I think in your site, you mentioned that like a quarter of people can end up with an amputation, right? And I think people who get an amputation, a lot, their longevity and their life expectancy decreases significantly, right? So a lot of times people die of a secondary cause, but like the primary cause or underlying issue that started it all was the vascular stenosis.
That's correct, Amara. Actually, after 1 year of amputation, 50% of those patients will die. And after 3 years after amputation, 75%. So it's a major problem that we don't want to have in our societies. And if those diseases are prevented and detected earlier, those amputations or those events, like after 5 years of acute limb ischemia, As you mentioned, one quarter of the patients will suffer amputation, stroke, or heart attack. If we can anticipate and prevent it, definitely those numbers are going to decrease and the life expectancy and quality of life of those patients are dramatically improved.
Absolutely. Now, I do want to share my screen for, you know, some of the people who watch the show. They watch on YouTube and Spotify. You know, just to kind of show the device, because I do like the way the device is designed. You guys did a fantastic job with it. Where are you guys in your regulatory pathway to date?
So at the moment, we are developing the device and improving the machine learning algorithms. We have done our benchtop test in flow models to ensure that the sensor can detect password occlusion and changes in flow. And also in 5 months, we are going to do our first animal lab for animal validation. Now, in regulatory, we are going to start very soon the conversations with the FDA. We have been told that we can fall under a 510K. So we are going to plan our clinical trials accordingly. But this is going to come by 2026, something like that.
So if it's following a 510K, is there anything that's somewhat similar to this in the market? And how are you essentially using the 510K pathway?
Yes, that's a very good question, Omar. There is a predicate device that is quite similar of what we tried to do. It's not exactly the same because they are monitoring arrhythmias, like the loop recorders. Loop recorders are subcutaneous sensors like the one that we are designing and developing, but they are detecting arrhythmias with AKG. What we are trying to do with ultrasound is detect vessel occlusion, which is actually what kills patients, but we believe that we can go down that route.
Interesting. On the ultrasound side, you know, and again, I'll show the technology. So essentially you have a sensor who becomes like an insertable implant, and then you provide the patient with essentially an at-home ultrasound. How important is it for that ultrasound to be high resolution? I'm guessing it doesn't need to be that high resolution. You're using an algorithm to sort of detect the stenosis of the vessel.
Yes. Thank you for that question, because many investors and doctors are asking for it. What actually are you detecting, or what is the patient seeing? Actually, the patient is given by the doctor a scanner with just one button. They are going to put the scanner close to the device, wherever it has been inserted. In that case, let's say close to the groin. The patient is going to press the button, and it's going to have audiovisual cues to know whether they are doing a good lecture or not. And this scanner is powering with ultrasound the sensor. And then the sensor is receiving and emitting the signal back to the scanner, which is going to send to the cloud those lectures, and the machine learning algorithms are going to make the reading. So actually, there is no image here. There is nothing to interpret. It's just confirmation that the vessel remains the same as the delta that we had at the beginning once the patient had inserted this device and we knew that the vessel was healthy. And if something changes in terms of the flow and in terms of the vessel occlusion, then we are going to both the patient and the doctor are going to receive a message saying that there has been a major vascular change, and therefore the patient should go to the hospital to be diagnosed properly.
Interesting. So this reminds me of many years ago, one of the, I don't want to call it a prediction, one of the types of medical devices that I really liked are devices that take hardware and software and put the skills of a specialist in the hand of a generalist, or in this case, a patient. One of the better examples of this is DermaSensor. DermaSensor is essentially a handheld device that looks for skin lesions and monitors them. So general practitioners, family practitioners, et cetera, who are not dermatologists, uses to check the skin, doesn't do any imaging or anything. It just literally tells the physician, you should continue monitoring this or send this patient to a dermatologist, right? You guys are essentially doing a similar thing where you don't need to see the imaging, you don't need to see the details. All you need is somebody to be administering this ultrasound test, right? In this case, it's the patient, right? But you're using software to take the skills of, let's say, a skilled ultrasound technician or a physician, put it in hardware, and then have it to the patient where essentially they're monitoring themselves on a daily basis. And I'm guessing this is essentially being sent to their physician to monitor it so that they can say, hey, like, we have some changes, you need to come in.
That's a very good point, Omar, and that's completely right. Ultrasound, we know that if you use, for instance, Echo Doppler, which is the gold standard to monitor patients with vessel occlusions. We know that depending how you which angle has the probe, you can have one lecture or the other. So those diagnoses with Echo Doppler are not completely 100% objective. It depends on the skills of the person who is doing the test. So what we are trying to get out here is this objectivity and provide an objective measurement, objective number, which then it's translated into much easier message to interpret that both the patient and the doctor are going to receive. Okay, there is nothing to be worried about, or some changes here in terms of the vessel occlusion flow dynamics, so it should be appropriately assessed. So these normally 12 months of follow-ups that you have something, that those vessel occlusions, they change very quickly, right? You can have a vessel occlusion, massive vessel occlusion in just a matter of days, a matter of hours. So things can change very quickly in cardiovascular health. And that's the burden that healthcare faces, right? You cannot bring in 33 million patients that are healthy at once, right? So this device aims to detect which patients might really need it, a diagnosis, and then send this message and send them to the hospital, because in between 12 months, many things can happen.
Of course. How often, like, in practice, when you give this to a patient, how often are they expected to do a scan? Are they expected to do this every day, a few times a week? What's the ideal? I mean, I guess the ideal scenario is they're doing it like multiple times a day, but patients usually compliance is like really tough, right? What's the bare minimum needed for a patient?
Yes, the adherence to the treatment, it's something that it's always a problem. Of course, either you talk about drugs or devices. In terms of our device, it will depend on what the doctor prescribes. And vascular occlusion, normally, again, something can change very quickly, but it's not like a vessel is occluded from one day to another, right? So there are cues before that can tell you that something is going on. So normal vessel occlusion and acute limb ischemia, a reading per week would give you more than enough of insights. If you have had, for instance, a bypass, the first week or the first month, the doctor might rather prefer to give the patient the instruction to read every day, because the first month after a bypass, open surgery is critical. But normally after that, every 3-4 days, up to 7 days would be enough.
I like what you just said right now, because you just kind of increased your TAM right there, because, you know, for me, when I'm looking at this, I'm thinking if somebody goes and gets like a metabolic panel or something and they have markers that say, hey, like you might have some stenosis going on, they go get it checked and it's like, yeah, we need to monitor this. But then for the number of people who have stents and, you know, let's say bypass procedures done and everything, that's another added thing where, you know, patients can be monitored for this. Is that correct?
100%. Actually, our device, the main patient would be a patient that we know that has a vascular occlusion, let's say in the legs, and they had either a bypass or a stent or simply an angioplasty, mechanical thrombectomy, something to fix the occlusion on the patient's leg. Then at the same time that you did this procedure, you place this sensor, now you know the vessel is healthy, so you have your delta, and then you discharge the patient with the sensor inserted. Of course, you could catch, like my dad, right? My dad has an occlusion here, they cut it early, my dad didn't have any procedure performed, but you could perfectly place it in the shoulder, so it keeps monitoring the flow dynamics that happen in the common keratite, and also that would be of good use, but the main patients would be those, right, that they have been conducted a vascular procedure, and at the same time you place the sensor to ensure that the procedure was successful and not reoccluding, which doesn't happen in a few number of times. It's quite frequent, actually.
Got it. That makes sense. What other procedures aside from like bypass and placing a stent can this be used in terms of like post-operative follow-up with patients?
Yes, you can have either an angioplasty with 4T balloon, which is simply a catheter with a balloon on the tip that you inflate once you are in the occlusion, and then the doctors remove the blood clot that is in that section of the vessel. You can do it with mechanical thrombectomy, like devices like Lining, sold by Penumbra, or Rotarex if you want to do atherectomy, if the vessel has a much chronic occlusion, or simply you want to place in a stent because it has been any other vascular problem or a bypass simply because you couldn't fix it and you had to do a bypass with an open graft. So all these vascular procedures would be elected to have remote monitoring because the first month you will have to go back to the hospital. During the first year, you should go 3-4 times for a medical checkup. And then after the first year, it's once a year. So during the first year, it's more critical. Therefore, the checkups are more frequent.
Yeah, and you said something very important here, which is remote monitoring. You know, remote monitoring, not just for hospitals, but, you know, private practice is big because of the fact that you're able to bill for it. And it's really, you know, I like things in medicine that are both lucrative for a clinician because, you know, they're running a business, they have to make money, right? But at the same time, enhances and improves patient outcomes, right? So remote monitoring is one of those great things. So for something like this, for remote monitoring, reimbursement codes do exist, but for this specifically, are there existing CPT codes for it?
Yes. Vessel occlusion, remote monitoring vessel occlusion, we are the first company to have a patent to that concept, to use the ultrasound for detecting vascular occlusion remotely. We are the first company to have this patent. But there are other CPT codes that they are generously reimbursing, like the example of the loop recorders, for instance. They are reimbursing $7,600 every time you insert a loop recorder. And also there is a CPT code for remote monitoring a month of $150. Medicare really understood the real value of remote monitoring for certain pathologies. So that's why we are pretty confident that we are going to achieve having a CPT code at some point once we are in the market.
Got it. So the remote monitoring CPT codes exist, but like not for remote monitoring of stenosis.
That's fine.
Okay, so the good news is that there are some CPT codes that exist, but once you're able to get the CPT code for remote monitoring, you do have sort of a a reimbursement mode. How long? What kind of patent did you guys file for, and how long do you have it?
We have filed a provisional patent with Wilson Sonsini, we are going to have it the normal time of the patents. We are going to have it for over 20 years plus one. That's the pattern that we have. The use of ultrasound to detect vascular occlusion remotely.
So we're on your website. For those who are interested, you can go to intelvasc.com. So you guys, first of all, like compliments to you, monitoring vascular stenosis anytime, anywhere. So many companies get this wrong, which is when I go to their website, it takes me a few minutes to figure out what they do. I love that you guys, have whoever helped you guys with the marketing and the website is really, did a good job here. So this is essentially the monitoring device, correct?
This is the scanner. This is the scanner that the patient would take home and would use to power the sensor.
Let's jump to that. So essentially your steps here, you insert an implant. What can you tell us about the implant that's being inserted?
Say it again, sorry.
Tell us a little bit about that the implant that's being inserted. So that the implant essentially is the sensor that's going into. Is it something that lives that it goes outside the vessel wall? What is that implant that's being put in?
Okay, yes. The implant would be the sensor, and it goes under the skin. This is performed in a, it can be in the outpatient setting, very traumatic, very minimally invasive procedure that also the loop recorders are using exactly the same. So it's a very well known procedure for the clinician. So this would be in the outpatient setting. You insert it under the skin, outside of the vessel, as you mentioned. Yes, that's correct. But this is helping us to reduce the variability, because if we would be using a wearable device, there have been many attempts to have a wearable device.
And a lot of variability in those.
Right.
You know, because
you have the same
right way. They move.
A patient like, you know, like me, or a patient of
the liability for that.
Yeah. Well, you remove all this variability, yes.
Next thing you have here is the scanner. Let me jump, you know, I think this is a good photo of the scanner. So I really like the UX and design of this. Is there a reason why, for those who are listening and they can't see, like the scanner essentially is like a wand with a circle at the end of it. Is there a reason why, is it just for aesthetics, or is there, what's the reason behind this, this like, you know, sort of halo at the end?
Yes, that's a very good question, Omar. Most people ask for it.
I have a guess. Yeah. Is it because of the you have sort of like basic ultrasound technology? You don't need anything high resolution. So I'm guessing that you have ultrasound throughout there to give you sort of a three-dimensional look. So that way, you know, if you have one ultrasound, you have to be really, you know, skilled at it. But if you have a bunch of little miniature ultrasound devices in a halo, you just put that over the sensor and it just takes that snapshot from a variety of different angles, so the patient can't mess this up. Is that correct?
Yeah, you are close. Yes, this is very related to the ultrasound technology. You need this coil of certain diameter to emit at a certain frequency and a certain power. So this has been very well measured by our under the direction of our CTO, who has been the developer of this device, and also their team, to really get the device design to work at the optimal way. So yeah, it's completely related to ultrasound technology. Absolutely.
Perfect. And then your last step here is just the clinical review. So what I like, again, a lot of times, you know, I'll see like things like this on websites, but you guys, you know, as a as an early stage company, you actually have that clinical dashboard here so people can see this. So we're on this clinical dashboard. Is this, who has access to this? Is this both the doctor and the patient, or whose dashboard would this be?
Yes. No, this is a clinical dashboard for the doctor to see. This is a mock-up, so it is not exactly the actual metrics that the doctor would be seeing, but it would be something quite similar. It's going to provide the doctor the evolution of the vessel, if has been worsened since the last lecture, and the progression that it's getting. So the doctor can also estimate, okay, I want to bring this patient in because I don't like what I'm seeing. The patient though will have an app that we also have designed, and it's going to be very intuitive, very easy to use. It's going to provide cues of the patient, whether the scanning has been successful, how to do it, not to forget about to do it, give some alerts to comply.
Nice. You can still use push notifications.
Exactly. So very similar to the apps that the current diabetes sensors have, that it's becoming a trend. Many people like those glucose sensors, patches, and they use the app as well. So it's going to be quite user friendly and similar to this technology that use the patch.
I think what's exciting about this is that, you know, I think since something happened, I think maybe it was already in motion, you know, wearables kind of came out in the, you know, like 2012, 2013, somewhere in that timeline. But something around COVID happened where more people got interested in their health. So for me, like, I wear a Whoop device. I'm not diabetic, but I actually just bought NutriSense, which is an app for continuous glucose monitoring. So I want to be monitoring myself. And so I think more people, like the average person, is getting used to these remote monitoring devices and using them to sort of be more in charge of their health. And I think that what's exciting about this is that if someone is consciously having to scan themselves, and this will be a really fascinating study to see for you guys, is the improvement on patient health and outcome when using this device. Because I think once you're aware of something through monitoring, your behavior ends up changing, right? Like that's the whole point of Whoop is you start getting data and you say, oh man, like I shouldn't drink alcohol because it kills my heart rate variability when I sleep. So like, you know, so I went from having a couple beers every weekend to like, I don't drink ever these days, you know? So I don't know if you guys have that, have thought about that like long term for those kind of studies or how to do that study, but that'd be fascinating to see.
That's correct, Omar. One of the main goals that we have here, beyond preventing, of course, deathly vascular events, is to improve the cardiovascular awareness or disease awareness of those patients. And to actively have to do something to control their disease, that they are going to be much more mindful about lifestyle and diet and all those patterns or these aspects in their lives that they should be having to into account. And also, I hope it's going to help doctors as well with the, you know, trying to make their patients understand that something has to be changing, otherwise this disease wouldn't be there in most of the cases. So, 100%.
Fantastic. Yeah, and by the way, I was just thinking about it, like, I like companies who are in a position to kind of design and create their own category. And so I just looked up remote vessel monitoring, and that's a thing, but like in the, you know, when it comes to monitoring boats, you know, like shipping vessels. So like, I think you guys will probably be the very first remote vessel monitoring company. So I'm really excited for you guys. Last few questions for you, you know, and thanks for coming on the show. Number one is, and again, please share what you can. How much have you guys raised to date? And then are you okay, like sharing, like, what are you trying to raise?
Yes, we have contributed with between the founders and the advisors to $800,000 pre-seed. And with this, we have generated the first prototypes of the scanner, the sensor, the machine learning algorithms. We have done all our tests. And now we are in our seed round, 3 million seed round. We are first raising we are separating in two phases the seed round. We are going to raise $1 million in a safe note and then a prize round of $2 million to complete this $3 million seed round. This will help us to finalize the animal lab tests and also start miniaturizing the device.
Fantastic. Fantastic. And then like lastly, tell us a little bit more about the team and the advisors you guys have, because obviously this is, you know, taking a med tech company to market and clinically validating is very difficult. Tell us a little bit about your team.
Yes. How we met was a good story with the founders. When I started to call to several of my former customers in the last years to validate if that was actually a good idea. There was no vascular surgeon or interventional cardiologist that told me, oh no, that's no value, don't try it. Everyone mentioned in one way or the other to have this information would be vital and would help us a lot. And the last, one of the last doctors I called, Dr. Bismuth, is the chief of vascular surgery in Tampa General Hospital. He mentioned, well, I don't only believe it's a good idea because I just wrote an article in the main book of vascular surgery, but I would also like to help you to create the company. So he was my first co-founder and the person who has supported and helped us a lot to develop the hardware, the technology, and many partnerships like we have created now with the NCU State. We have a co-development agreement with them. And now we have access to $3 million of, worth of engineering equipment and students. And it has been paramount for us to have a very well-equipped lab to do all the tests and product development. So it has been critical. And then the part of the technical part, I met Kyle because he was the engineering director at Flowsonics. Flowsonics is a very very successful company who is already selling products in the market. They created the first wearable sensor in the ultrasonic sensor for remote monitoring as well, the common keratite. And I said, well, you have created this amazing device. Would you like to create the next generation of it? And he likely accepted. We created S3 Intel VASC. And also we have Professor Marie Muller, which is a professor in physics in the Department of Engineering in the NCU state. And she owns all this knowledge about the physics of the use of ultrasound to detect to detect and monitor different aspects in different organs. So she owns the core technology and the core know-how of the technology, helping Kyle and Kyle's team. And we have Nick and we have Alec, many people in the technical and engineering department helping to develop this amazing technology. So all this falls under your question about the funding team. It was fortunate that we all met at the right moment, the right time. Regarding the advisors, they have been also critical, right? I've been supported by the former president of Penumbra since the inception of the idea. And now he's an investor and advisor as well, James Bray. We have other CEOs of other companies like Leo, Dave Kuragundla, that you might have known at some point. He has been a speaker at LSI for many years, and he has developed this successful wearable patch to monitor arteriovenous fistulas. So he has been supporting the team and myself to not fall in the mistakes that he might have fallen for. It's a rocky path, the CEO. So it's good to have as advisors other fellow CEOs that can help to run the company smoothly. And many others that I'm missing. We have four or five doctors supporting the company at the moment and helping with the device. And the design and many other clinical aspects. So we have been very, very lucky to have a very knowledgeable advisors and super committed team. Our vision is to reduce or relegate this cardiovascular mortality to not the first, to the second or third place. We all are very committed to reach that goal.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Well, Andrew, look, I appreciate you coming on the show. I'm looking forward to following you guys. You're going to be at both LSI USA and Europe, so investors can look you up there, correct?
That's correct. So we are going all to meet at the LSI, yes.
Fantastic. Yeah, it's a great show. It's one of my favorites. Well, Andrew, thanks so much for joining us. For those who are listening, if you're interested to learn more about Andrew and his company, go to IntelVASC, that's IntelVASC.com. I'm your host, Omar Khatib. If you're a startup founder, you're interested to learn more and possibly come on the show, go and hit me up on LinkedIn. You know where to find me. We'll see you all next time.
Thank you for enjoying another epic episode of The State of MedTech. If you're feeling inspired and love this episode, do us a favor, hit that subscribe button and turn notifications on so you never miss an episode. And be sure to give us 5 stars and write a short review because that helps more people discover this amazing community of ours. If you're a company who has a executive that you'd like to be on the show, or perhaps you want to sponsor one of the episodes, shoot us an email at hello@khatibandco.com. Take care and see you next time.